Well, as the time, the clock is ticking for Terry Schindler Schiavo, so the conversation must intensify. We're going to spend the first half hour at least today talking about some things you may not have heard in the Terry Schindler Schiavo case. Father Robert Johansson is going to be our guest here in the first 25 minutes. We're going to discuss the medical options. We hear that the medical options for Terry are, if not limited, if not completely gone, then limited. Well, has she been given the best of possible care? Has she been properly examined? Has she even been properly diagnosed? We'll answer that question here in the first 25 minutes. Father Robert Johansson is author of a column for National Review Online titled Starving for a Fair Diagnosis. Gretchen Pasentino will be our guest in the second hour. Before we get there, we'll have some audio from last night's Nightliner, Chris Bury. He interviewed both Michael Schiavo, Terry's husband and guardian, and alongside Michael was his ever-present lawyer, George Filos. We'll hear some of the audio from Nightline last night. A little bit later in this hour, Gretchen Pasentino will be our guest in the second hour. The church calendar is our subject. We're going to be talking, where are we now? We're in Lent, and we're headed fast upon Holy Week, Palm Sunday, all of those things. We'll discuss that with Gretchen Pasentino of Answers in Action in the second hour of the program. Also in the second hour, David Van Bima of Time Magazine has authored a cover story on Mary, the mother of Jesus. The title of the story, Hail Mary. He's talking about the resurgence of Mary's popularity among Protestants and non-Catholics. We'll discuss that with David Van Bima. He's a senior writer for Time Magazine. Then we'll keep on that subject but change guests. Dr. Martin Noland of the Concordia Historical Institute here in St. Louis will be our guest for a biblical perspective on Mary to round off the, well, we'll be actually going into the third hour of the program with that conversation. And somewhere in there, Dr. Albert Mohler will be our guest. Brian McLaren, of course, we've talked about him and the emergent church movement, you know, the emerging church movement. We did a little review of some of the audio from an interview between Shane Rosenthal and Brian McLaren. Dr. Mohler has written a brief review of Brian McLaren's book, A Generous Orthodoxy. We'll find out what he thinks about the book, about its quote-unquote orthodoxy, and about the emergent church movement in the last hour of Issues Etc. Today. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our first guest, Father Robert Johansson, is pastor of St. Joseph's Catholic Church in St. Joseph's, Michigan, and he's authored a column on National Review Online titled Starving for a Fair Diagnosis. Father Johansson, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's a pleasure to be on.
I've got to know, did you happen to watch Nightline last night?
I caught a few minutes of it. I caught the tail end of it, and I was appalled, but I frankly wasn't surprised. Michael Schiavo and George Filos, back in 2003, when they removed Terry's feeding tube, back then in October of 2003, Michael Schiavo and George Filos went on Larry King Live at that time and talked about how being deprived of food and water was going to be this peaceful death, that Terry was going to just slip away, that it was going to be this very quiet and natural thing. And the fact is, nothing could be further from the truth. The death that Terry will undergo, if the feeding tube is removed Friday, will be long and painful and horrible, and there's simply no other way to describe it. It is the kind of death that we would not be permitted to inflict upon the very worst criminals.
Now, this goes to one of the points that you make in your National Review Online article, and that is one of the contentions last night on Nightline was that Terry's cerebral cortex has been replaced by fluid. She can no longer feel pain in any real sense. Both the lawyer and Michael Schiavo asserted that several times in the course of that conversation. You contend no one really knows that for sure because a proper diagnosis of Terry's real condition has never really been made. Tell us about it.
Well, you're correct in that proper diagnosis has never been made. You see, back in 2002, when Judge Greer was forced to have an evidentiary hearing, he was forced by a Florida appellate court to do that because they found that he had not properly considered evidence in his original 1998 hearing, in which he declared that Terry was in a persistent vegetative state. In that, now, in the 2002 hearings, all right, Judge Greer selected the tests that Terry would have to determine what her condition is, and the doctors who were brought in on the side of Michael Schiavo argued that that Terry did not need to have any of the advanced kinds of brain imaging procedures that most neurologists that I've discovered in the past week or so, most neurologists regard as simply standard. The neurologists that I've talked to were shocked when I informed them that Terry, for example, has never had an MRI, a magnetic resonance imaging scan. This is something the neurologists consider to be a standard procedure for diagnosing the extent of brain injury. The claim that Michael Schiavo and George Filos make that Terry's cerebral cortex has been replaced by spinal fluid, that claim is simply unsupportable given that the evidence that we have. Terry has only had a CT scan, and a CT scan is simply incapable of resolving the kind of detail that is necessary in order to make a statement like Terry's cerebral cortex has been replaced by spinal fluid. I mean, it's just that's something that they cannot possibly know. And the fact is, Terry's behavior, what she's been observed to do, flatly contradicts anything, any kind of impression like that.
And again, why has a non-invasive procedure like an MRI not been done for Terry?
The answer for that at rock bottom is that because Michael has never permitted it. The Schindlers have asked on at least three occasions over the past decade for Terry to be given an MRI. Michael Schiavo has refused, and Judge Greer, the trial judge in the case, has backed Michael up in allowing him to refuse it. Now, the excuse that's given for why Terry, or I should say one of the excuses that's given for why Terry cannot have an MRI, is that back in 92, as part of one of the last approaches of therapy that were tried on Terry, implants were placed in her skull. The attempt was to try to electrically stimulate her brain. That was an experimental technique that did not work. The doctor who did that experimental technique instructed Michael to remove those, have those implants removed, and did say at the time, you can't give Terry an MRI until you get those things removed. But he said, you got to do that. The doctor said, you know, Michael, have the implants removed. Michael has never done that. And now, in court, George Filos is using the existence of these implants as the excuse why the MRI can't be done, ignoring the simple fact that these implants could readily be removed and, as I said before, the fact that the doctor instructed Michael to remove them.
All right. This is extremely sad, but also quite frustrating for everyone involved, most certainly for physicians who've been on the outside looking in and saying, wow, like the one that you talked to in your article, how could they fail to do what would be considered the most fundamental test to determine her real condition? There is an expert witness that has been of much use to George Filos and Michael Schiavo. You talk about him in your article. Tell us about this doctor who has been the expert witness, one Ronald Cranford.
Well, yes, there's quite a bit I could say about Dr. Cranford. Dr. Ronald Cranford is a very well-known neurologist. He's on the faculty of the University of Minnesota. Now, Cranford is infamous or famous, depending on your perspective, as one of the most outspoken advocates of doctor-assisted suicide and euthanasia in the medical community. He has written articles saying that Alzheimer's patients should be starved to death. That was an op-ed that appeared in the Minneapolis St. Paul Star Tribune. He has described PVS patients as the equivalent of animals, that they're not human beings. He said that people with brain impairment are not persons. They do not have personhoods, and they should not have constitutional rights. So that's the perspective that Dr. Cranford is coming from. Dr. Cranford has managed to make a career for himself as an expert witness testifying in court cases involving people who are brain impaired or PVS or, you know, these various conditions. And the way that works is that once a doctor has appeared in several courts, in several trials, and has been certified by those courts as an expert witness, other courts will simply accept his status as an expert almost without question. And so it's the kind of thing that, you know, the more you are touted as an expert, the more your expertise becomes simply taken as a matter of fact, regardless of what questions might exist at the reality of that expertise. And the fact is that given Dr. Cranford's ideological perspective, I mean, you have to say at the very least that he has an agenda. He has an agenda that is to be an activist for ending the lives of people who are brain injured and impaired.
Father Robert Johansson is our guest. He's author of a column for National Review Online titled Starving for a Fair Diagnosis. He's pastor of St. Joseph's Catholic Church in St. Joseph's, Michigan. We're discussing Terry Schindler-Shivo and the real medical options that lie ahead in the very short amount of time she appears to have at this point. Our conversation is obviously open for your questions and comments as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It was asserted last night by Michael Schivo on Nightline during his interview with Chris Bury that the 15 doctors that the Schindler family, the parents of Terry, have had in, have not had access to Terry herself, that their diagnoses have been made on the basis of, he said, a picture of Terry. What do you know about this?
Well, that would be a rather inaccurate statement by Mr. Schivo. It is true that these doctors have not examined Terry. Now, the reason they haven't examined Terry is that Michael will not permit them to examine her. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of a chicken and egg scenario, if you will. So yes, they have not examined Terry. However, they certainly are relying on much more than simply a picture. I mean, for example, there is a great deal of video footage showing Terry interacting with her family, with other doctors and visitors. There are the eyewitness accounts of what Terry has done and does regularly. There is, of course, the doctor's own expertise in terms of their own experience in what are the kinds of things that are, in a sense, consistent with PVS. And what many of these doctors have said to me, and I have at this point approximately or nearly 50 neurologists, board-certified neurologists, some of whom are fellows of the American Academy of Neurology, some of whom are professors of neurology at major medical schools, and they're all saying the same thing, that Terry should be reevaluated, that she should be given these advanced imaging studies like the MRI. Some of them have said, you know, I don't know whether Terry is PVS or not, but looking at what's being claimed here, looking at what Cranford and the other doctors for Schivo are saying, and the evidence for what they're saying this doesn't pass the smell test.
Now, What about the care that Terry has been receiving in the last decade, laying aside the issue of whether or not she's been given the diagnostic tests necessary before one would even determine her condition? What about the regular care that someone in her condition, whatever it may be, might receive? How has Michael Scheibel fared there as a guardian?
I would say that Michael has fallen woefully short as a guardian. And in fact, there is ample evidence that Michael, in fact, has not lived up to the standards set by Florida law for what a guardian is supposed to do. For example, in the past year, Terry has had to have 5 teeth extracted. These teeth had to be extracted because of severe tooth decay. You got to remember, Terry's getting her food by a feeding tube. The only possible explanation for tooth decay is that she is not getting regular dental hygiene. And in fact, her parents, Bob and Mary, have been complaining for over a year that Terry's teeth haven't been brushed. She hasn't had a dental examination. In fact, until her teeth were extracted last year, she had not had a dental exam in over 5 years. Last year, Terry also developed skin ulcers on her buttocks and thighs. For anybody that has any familiarity with bedridden patients, they know that the development of skin ulcers is a hazard for those who are bedridden. However, skin ulcers can be readily prevented simply by turning the patient regularly. And this is a basic task that any certified nurse's aide can perform. This is the kind of thing that the staff of nursing homes do all the time. It's considered routine care. And furthermore, the presence of something so easily preventable as a skin ulcer is considered as a classic sign of neglect. Now, if you were to say, report, to whatever agency there in Missouri is responsible for this sort of thing, if you were to report a suspicion of elder abuse or neglect, and they were to go and investigate and find that the patient had skin ulcers, they would consider that as putative evidence of neglect, because they, as I said, they are so readily prevented. Michael has even gone so far as to forbid the staff of the hospice where she's at to open the windows. The Schindlers have on many occasions gone to the nursing hall or to the hospice and found that she had not been bathed in several days. So there is ample evidence of neglect. Terry has not had, and this is another thing that neurologists are shocked by, the last neurological exams that she's had were in 2002, and she has not had any neurological exams since. That is something most the doctors that I've talked to find simply inexplicable.
So while Michael Scheibel goes on the news programs of late and decries his wife's condition and talks about how terrible it is for her to live this way, it sounds as though his neglect as the guardian has contributed to that or worsened that condition.
That is very likely true. One of the things that I write about in my article is that Terry has not had any therapy since 1992. I mentioned she had that experimental protocol attempted, which was unsuccessful. When that was determined not to be working, the doctor responsible for it told Michael and the Schindlers. Now, at this point, 1992, Michael Scheibel and Terry's parents had not yet had their falling out, so to speak. They were still more or less working together. And so the doctor told them, you know, this isn't working. However, I think that there are other approaches that might work. You need to take Terry to the Shands Medical Center at the University of Florida, because he believed that there were therapeutic approaches they were using there that might work. Michael, as I mentioned before, never had the implants removed from Terry's skull, and he never took her to Shands. And in fact, that was the last meaningful attempt at therapy that Terry had. Now, apart from what we might call therapy intended to rehabilitate her, she has not had the basic physical therapy that doctors would consider normal for someone in her condition. One of the problems with someone who's bedridden, especially someone who has brain damage, is that, you know, they're not getting any exercise. They're not moving around. Their muscles will atrophy. The nerves that control the muscles will sometimes develop various disorders, all right? And what happens is the patient's muscles develop what are called contractures. Their muscles contract and they become contorted. And it's a condition that can be quite painful. Standard physical therapy can deal with this problem and, you know, prevent these kinds of contractures from happening. Terry has not had that basic physical therapy. Again, when I've spoken to these doctors over the past week or so, and I say, well, Terry hasn't had any therapy, and they'll say things like, you mean she hasn't even had physical therapy? And I said, no, nothing. And they're appalled. They cannot believe that this is taking place. They could not imagine that they could stand by as a doctor and allow this to happen to one of their patients.
When we come back from this break, Dr. Johansson, can you stay with us after the break? I'd like you to react to some of the audio that we've gleaned from last night's Nightline and have you answer a couple other questions.
Sure, I can stay for a while.
Great, that'd be wonderful. Dr. Robert Johansson is our guest pastor of St. Joseph's Catholic Church in St. Joseph's, Michigan. And he is author of a column for National Review Online titled Starving for a Fair Diagnosis. We're talking about Terry Schindler-Schiavo and the real medical options that have been missed in the past and are still present even today. We could still go back and have her reevaluated in advance of it's not that complicated. An ambulance to a local hospital that's got the right equipment. What, a couple hours? It could be done. We'll talk more about it, and we'll get some reaction from our guest to the Nightline Chris Bury interview with Michael Schiavo and his attorney George Filos last night. Father Robert Johansson is our guest. You can read his column, Starving for a Fair Diagnosis, on National Review Online at the website. It is nationalreview.com, nationalreview.com. If you'd like to join the conversation and react as well to last night's Nightline interview, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Stay tuned. We'll talk more about this in a minute.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
One of the most interesting and influential theologians and teachers of the 20th century is also one of the most intriguing preachers of the 20th century. Dr. Norman Nagel is a regular guest on Issues Etc., and our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is the selected sermons of Norman Nagel, but this book is not about Dr. Nagel. It is, like all of his sermons, about Christ and Him crucified. This selection of over 50 sermons over a lifetime of preaching is $24.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. There you'll find the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. Or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, selected sermons of Norman Nagel.
It takes courage for Christians in the Middle East to share about their faith in Christ with family and coworkers. This Global Minute provides an inspirational report about Christians reaching out in the Muslim world. From one church in the Middle East, there are 30 missionaries serving throughout the region. This news comes from Arab World Ministries, which is staffed by 25 Arabs full-time. One of the missionary couples goes out from a local church in Syria. Christians living in various parts of the Middle East are helping with projects to improve the quality of life for everyone, including Muslims. Their work provides an avenue to tell others about their Christian beliefs. But they've got to be careful because many laws exist to deter Muslims from converting to Christ. Pray Christ will be glorified in the Middle East. Learn more about Muslims and how to win them to Christ. Check out our Listener's Corner at missionvisionnetwork.org. That's missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Recently, I was asked to speak about principles of godly leadership. Since that's not a subject I have studied, I quickly went for Plan B. I spoke about some principles in the Bible. Principles that strike my minister's mind as saying something about leadership. So I was interested in Charlene Holt's article about Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Covey says, be proactive. Know that you are responsible for your life. The Bible says, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive what is due him for the things done in the body, whether good or bad. 2 Corinthians 5:10. Covey, put first things first. The Bible, seek first the kingdom of God and its righteousness. Matthew 6:33. Covey, seek first to understand. Bible, be quick to listen, slow to speak. James 1:19. Covey, begin with the end in mind. Bible, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with a glory that will be revealed in us. Romans 8:18. Covey has now written the 8th habit, and that habit is, find your voice and inspire others to find theirs. Says the Bible, we cannot help speaking about what we have seen and heard. Acts 4:20.
Mornings on AM 850 KFUO offer you a Christian way to start your weekday. Hi, I'm Paul Clayton, inviting you to hear your inspirational Christian favorites, great guests, and the information you need to prepare you for the road ahead. And after the morning show at 9:30, stick around for Focus on the Family on AM 850 KFUO.
People's feedings, tooth feedings, are stopped across this country every day. If my wife wasn't the celeb, as everybody is calling her now, there would be no discussion in the legislation right now.
That's Michael Schiavo last night on Nightline with Chris Bury. He was also there with his attorney, George Filos. We're going to be hearing some of the audio from that interview for the remainder of this first hour of Issues Etc. Our guest in the last segment has agreed to stay with us and react to some of this audio. Father Robert Johansson is our guest, pastor of St. Joseph's Catholic Church in St. Joseph's, Michigan, and author of a column for National Review Online titled Starving for a Fair Diagnosis. Before we go on to talk, to react to some of that Nightline audio, Father Johansson, one last question, and that is the future. It appears to be very short, at least legally, for Terry Schindler Schiavo. Is it possible to get done this fair diagnosis, as you call it, even in the amount of time that seems to remain?
Well, that would be very difficult to do because, in addition to, you know, the examination of Terry, and you have to, you know, manage the logistics of getting her to a hospital that has an MRI facility, and, you know, to take the time to do the MRI. That could be done in a day, though. The real difficulty, though, lies in this, and that is that diagnosing persistent vegetative state is not easy. One of the things that all of the neurologists told me was that this is one of the most difficult diagnoses to make, all right? the American Academy of Neurology has said in its literature that it can take months to properly come up with a confident diagnosis of PVS. And the reason for that is that people who have severe brain injuries, all right, do not respond to stimulus, do not respond to the world around them in a normal or predictable way. They have very erratic levels of attention. They can be responsive and alert and aware of their environment one day and seem completely unaware and unresponsive the next. And so it takes examination over a period of weeks, and as I said, sometimes even months, you know, spending hours with the patient. That's one of the deficiencies of the examinations done on behalf of Michael Schiavo. The doctor I mentioned a while ago, Dr. Cranford, he examined Terry once for 45 minutes. And on that basis, he claims to determine that Terry is in a persistent vegetative state. The neurologists that I've talked to have said that that's preposterous, that you cannot possibly come to that diagnosis. And in fact, a study done in the British Medical Journal, this was a study that was done at the in England at their Royal Hospital for Neurodisability. This is a hospital that specializes in treating brain injured patients. The director of that hospital and a number of other doctors on the staff realized over time that they were having patients sent to them who had been diagnosed as persistent vegetative state, who in fact were not in a PVS at all. These people had brain damage, but many of them were able to benefit from therapy, and as they concluded, they said many of these people were able to recover a high degree of functioning. And their conclusion was that there was a diagnostic error rate of 43%. All right, that means that doctors got it wrong 43% of the time when they determined that someone was in a PVS.
Doesn't that perhaps render the whole category of PVS perhaps less meaningful?
Well, that's a very mild way of putting it. Doctor that I interviewed for an article that I wrote previously, this is an article I wrote last year, he said that PVS is a meaningless diagnosis. In fact, the Rehabilitation Center at Northwestern University in Chicago, their Rehabilitation Center, because of the widely known errors in PVS diagnosis, they routinely, I mean every time, they routinely reassess patients that are sent to them with a diagnosis of PVS.
More fundamentally, yesterday we had a conversation with a medical doctor and a medical ethicist, and both of them took issue with the nomenclature PVS, particularly the term vegetative, because they said that it has the effect, whether or not it's intended, of dehumanizing.
They're exactly right. And in fact, last year, Pope John Paul II addressed a conference, an international conference in Rome that was on the persistent vegetative state. And one of the things he said is that you can never relegate somebody to a subhuman category on the basis of this diagnosis of a vegetative state. He reiterated that no matter what the person's condition or level of impairment, that a person is always a child of God. A person always has intrinsic human dignity and has essential human rights, no matter how badly off they might be. So the objection to the diagnosis itself or the terminology is a well-founded objection.
We're talking with Father Robert Johansson. And we're going to be listening to some audio here. Chris Bury last night on Nightline interviewed Michael Schiavo, Terry Schiavo's guardian and husband, and the attorney for Michael Schiavo, George Filos. One of the questions that came up early in the interview had to do with the medical malpractice settlement that Michael received. The question was, did you receive this medical malpractice money?
Yes. Well, no.
And what happened to that?
You know, Michael didn't receive those funds. Those funds have been used for Terry's medical care and guardianship expenses and costs and fees over many, many years. Those funds are virtually gone, and Mr. Schiavo is not going to inherit or gain one penny by the result of Terry's death.
Father Johansson, the attorney there, George Filos, makes it sound like no expense has been spared and the money is gone for Terry's care. What do you think of it?
Well, you know, he spoke about costs and fees, and I'll tell you, there have been plenty of costs and fees that have come out of that fund. Most of them have gone to George Filos and the other attorneys that Michael has hired in his efforts to try to end Terry's life. Nobody is exactly sure how much money we're talking about, because Michael does not have to account for that money to anybody, all right? He is the guardian, and therefore the money in Terry's malpractice settlement fund is at his discretion to spend. Judge Greer has also ruled on that, that he is free to, you know, spend that money as he sees fit for Terry's, quote, care, even if his idea of care, as I said, is ending her life. Most of the people involved in the case have said that George Filos has received somewhere on the order of $500,000 to $600,000 out of that fund, which would have started out in the award. It would have started out with him receiving about $900,000. The original award was $1.2 million. Then the attorney, you know, gets their cut, which is usually 25% to 33%, and then the remainder was left in Terry's fund. Now, what went unsaid there was that Michael himself also received a settlement, all right, personally, and that was $600,000 that he received for what they call loss of consortium, and that's, you know, compensation for the fact that, you know, he lost his wife. That was something that they left out there. But the idea that no expense has been spared for Terry's actual medical care and treatment, I'm sorry, that's simply false and misleading. It's simply not true. As I said, Terry has had no therapy whatsoever since 1992.
One of the most chilling moments last night in the interview on Nightline with Michael Schiavo came where Michael Schiavo was asked about the prospect of Terry being starved to death. Here's what he had to say.
Terry will not be starved to death. Her nutrition and hydration will be taken away. This happens across this country every day. Death through removing somebody's nutrition is very painless. That has been brought to the courts many of times. Doctors have come in and testified. It is a very painless procedure. Terry can't, she has no cortex left. She doesn't feel pain. She doesn't feel hunger. So what's going to happen is slowly that her potassium and her electrolytes will slowly diminish, and she will drift off to a nice little sleep and then eventually pass on to be with God.
Father Johansson, what do you make of his description?
Chilling is just about the only charitable way I can describe it. It's one of those things where There are so many falsehoods uttered in such rapid succession that it's hard to even know where to begin. I'll start out with one point that he brought up, and that is, as I mentioned, this business about Terry not being able to feel pain. That is simply false. And in fact, Dr. Cranford, Michael Schiavo's own doctor, actually saw and witnessed her experiencing pain. At one point in his examination of her, He struck her on the forehead between the eyes very forcefully. He whacked her on the head, a good solid whack on the forehead, all right? Terry recoiled and moaned, all right? She let out a moan. Now, when the video of the exam was shown in court, you know, Dr. Cranford was challenged on this. Well, you know, look, she just moaned in response to your whacking her on the head. Isn't that a response to pain? Dr. Cranford said, well, no, that's just a reflex. Now, the neurologists, again, that I've talked to have rejected that idea as absurd. One of the doctors that I talked to, he's a professor of neurology at Wake Forest University, and he said flat out, he said, a moan is not a reflex, all right? The way that you vocalize, if you moan, it cannot be a reflex. You know, wincing and grimacing and recoiling are not reflexes. The idea that Terry does not feel pain is ridiculous. In fact, it's ironic because in the hospice's orders, the medical orders for the hospice where Terry is at, the orders that they're under of how to proceed once her feeding tube is removed, all right? She is prescribed, all right, the doctor has prescribed after her feeding tube is removed, all right, for her to be given naproxen, all right? Naproxen is a painkiller. And in fact, it says, naproxen, so many times a day at such a dosage, to alleviate discomfort and pain. Well, you know, you can't have it both ways. If they have to give her medication to alleviate pain, well, she must be experiencing pain. What Michael Schiavo and George Filos are doing is they are relying on the ignorance that many people have of these issues and of what happens at the end of life. Terry most certainly will experience pain. She will experience a long, drawn-out, and in the end, agonizing pain.
We're talking about Terry Schindler-Schiavo and her real medical options. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. In about 20 minutes, we'll talk to Gretchen Pasentino of Answers in Action about the church calendar. Our guest, Father Robert Johansson, is pastor of St. Joseph's Catholic Church in St. Joseph's, Michigan, and he's author of this column on National Review Online titled Starving for a Fair Diagnosis. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. And our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Okay, here's another interesting question that has been raised much of late. I think we've probably had a half a dozen guests lately raise this very question. Why doesn't Michael simply divorce Terry?
Yes, I've moved on with my life, and I moved on with a portion of it. But I still have a big commitment to Terry. I made her a promise. And another reason why I won't give Terry back is that Mr. Schindler testified in court at the 2000 trial that he would, to keep Terry alive, he would cut her arms and legs off and put her on a ventilator just to keep her alive. So why would I give her to a man that would do that to you?
Father Johansson, now that's another image there that probably stuck with people who saw that interview. What is he talking about?
I frankly have no idea whatsoever. Bob Schindler, that's Terry's father, has said that he will do everything in his power to save Terry's life. He has said that he will do everything in his power to keep her alive. However, I know the Schindlers well. I know Bob well. We've talked about these things many times, all right? They have a very good understanding. They've had to develop a very good understanding of the medical and ethical issues involved here. If it was a situation where Terry was actually and truly terminally ill and her life were coming to an end, they would, and they've said this to me, they would allow her to die naturally. The problem, of course, is that Terry isn't terminally ill. She isn't dying. She is in no imminent danger of death. One of the misleading things, again, that Michael and Mr. Filos continually talk about is this idea that people who have their feeding tubes withdrawn just kind of slip away. And that is a very gross inaccuracy. Because while it is true that people in the very end stages of very serious diseases, like, you know, people in end-stage cancer and that kind of thing, while it's true that those people do stop eating, and when they get to a certain point, there's simply no point in trying to feed them anymore, all right? Again, that's talking about people who are in the imminent last stages of dying. Terry isn't anything like that kind of condition, all right? In terms of Terry's experience of being deprived of food and water, she will experience pretty much what you and I would experience if we were deprived of food and water for 7 to 10 days. All right, and we, you know, it doesn't require any great leap of medical insight to realize that that would be a pretty horrible way to die.
At one point in the Nightline interview last night, George Filos, the attorney for Michael Schiavo, weighed in with something that I found simply ironic. Here he is.
Terry Schiavo is not a piece of property, not a suitcase that one person can give to another. She's an individual that has constitutional rights that have been adjudicated. It's a constitutional right to say, I don't want medical treatment, and the state can't force you to have it. She may be in a vegetative state, but her dignity requires that we honor her rights, and that's what this case is about now. Everyone's constitutional rights are at stake. You know, Jeb Bush in Florida is determined to become the George Wallace of his generation, standing on the courthouse steps saying we're not going to obey a court order that carries out a patient's constitutional right.
Now, laying aside the reference to Jeb Bush for a moment, does it seem odd to you that he asserts her rights as a human being at the time like this?
Ironic is the understatement of the day, I'd say. This is a typical kind of standing things on their head that I've unfortunately heard from Mr. Filos on many occasions. I will grant readily that George Filos is a very skilled attorney and he is a very gifted speaker, and you know he could probably sell ice cubes to Eskimos. Okay, but in terms of stating what is actually factual and true, I mean, he's falls woefully short. The idea, firstly, that they are defending Terry's rights in this is absurd. What they're talking about is the ruling that the judge made that Terry would not have wanted to live like this, that she would have wanted to have her feeding tube withdrawn. Well, the problem with that contention is that there is no evidence for it whatsoever besides Michael Schiavo's own contention, which was completely uncorroborated until the very last moment when George Filos kind of sprang up and said, oh, wait, we do have it corroborated. The corroborators are Michael's brother and his sister-in-law. That's Michael's corroboration. And Michael managed for the first six years of Terry's condition, managed to avoid making any kind of mention of this so-called wish of Terry's to any other human being. I mean, there was literally not a word said about it. In her malpractice hearings, the malpractice trial, Michael repeated over and over again his undying love for Terry and that he would do everything to care for her, forever, that he would do everything that he could for her, you know, for the next 50 years, if that's what it took. There was no mention whatsoever that, you know, Terry wouldn't want to go on living this way. So the idea that somehow they are vindicating Terry's rights is absurd. It's absurd, and it's dishonest.
All right, very quickly, Michael Schiavo's final thoughts from Nightline last night, and then with only about 30 seconds in response, your final thoughts, Father Johansson.
Just because this happened to Terry doesn't mean I don't still love her. She was a part of my life. She'll always be a part of my life. And to sit here and be called a murderer, an adulterer, like people that don't know me, and a governor stepping into my personal private life, who doesn't know me either, and using his personal gain to win votes, just like the legislators are doing right now, pandering to the religious rights, so the people up there, the anti-abortion people, standing outside of Tallahassee. What kind of government is this? This is a human being.
Father Johansson, with only about 30 seconds, your reaction and final thought.
I don't know what is in Michael Schiavo's heart. I don't know what is in his mind. I cannot address that at all. What we can look at are his actions and his behavior, all right? The fact is that he has neglected Terry. The fact is that he has lived for over a decade in an adulterous relationship. The fact is that he almost never visits Terry. His visits to Terry are only done when he needs to, you know, make an appearance before the cameras, all right? I don't know what he means by saying that Terry's a part of his life, but I find his crocodile tears to be unconvincing.
Father Robert Johansson, thank you for being our guest, and thanks for sticking around with us for the next 25 minutes.
I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to do it, and thank you for having me on.
Father Robert Johansson, pastor of St. Joseph's Catholic Church in St. Joseph's, Michigan, and author of this column for National Review Online titled Starving for a Fair Diagnosis. Read this article, folks. It will be very enlightening. Lots of news I didn't even know, and I've been following this for years now, about Terry Schindler Schiavo's condition past and present. NationalReview.com is the website, NationalReview.com, the article Starving for a Fair Diagnosis by Father Robert Johansson. When we come back from this break in the second hour of the program, Gretchen Passantino, a regular guest, will be with us from Answers in Action. We're right in the middle of Lent. Well, actually, we're getting toward the end of Lent, heading in toward Holy Week. Where do all of these dates and seasons come from? We'll talk about the church calendar with Gretchen when we come back. And then, a little bit later in that hour, David Van Beem of Time Magazine will discuss the cover story on Mary. And Dr. Martin Nolan will continue the conversation on Mary with us, a biblical perspective on Mary, later in the next hour. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.